From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, healing our planet and maybe ourselves with Dr. Bruce Lipton. Here's what's happening. Well, here we are in the month of May in a late season storm that brought bands of heavy, wet snow, can you believe it, to the Midwest and the Plain States, now heading eastward, parts of southeastern and eastern Minnesota, into western Wisconsin, expected to get more snow. The storm had dumped up to 13 inches of snow in Minnesota, where I-35 was closed very early due to the snow and down power lines. Up to 14 inches of snow has been measured in Ellsworth, Wisconsin. Robert Felix, author of Not by Fire, But by Ice, who claims we're in a mini ice age. Robert, month of May and all this snow? What the heck's going on?
Oh, man, George, I'll tell you, it's record snow, as we're talking record snow in Omaha and in Mason City and Rochester. But, you know, there's another thing I think your listeners may not have heard about that I want to mention. In Ireland, 43,000 carcasses of dead sheep have been recovered from a snowstorm that took place there, record snow, just in March. And the mainstream media has not been covering that. 43,000 sheep that died. They got buried in snowdrifts up to 18 feet deep. And now we're seeing this stuff happen in the United States, with record snow. And now, as you just said, more snow is on the way. This is these records date back to the 1800s.
And what's causing all this, though? Why, Robert? What's happening?
Well, you know, I've been talking about a coming ice age. In this case, I think it's because of the lack, not lack, but the fewer sunspots. Is sunspots are at the lowest level they've been in more than 100 years, and there are a lot of scientists. There's astrophysicist in Russia, Dr. Habibulo Abdusamatov. Boy, that's a mouthful. But anyway, based on the sunspot cycle and based on what happened in the 1600s when they had what was called the Maunder minimum, many scientists, many astrophysicists specifically, are now saying that we are headed into a mini ice age. Of course, I'm thinking we're heading into the big one, but it's even a mini one is horrible to be contemplating.
Well, it's strange weather. I mean, yesterday was in the 80s in St. Louis, Robert. Right now it's under 45 degrees and still plummeting. Very strange. Robert's website, part of our Twitter feed, iceagenow.com. Five people in Saudi Arabia have died from a SARS-like virus, and two more are seriously ill. The virus causes pneumonia and sometimes kidney failure. But the one they're all watching, of course, is the avian flu, the H7N9 in China. Now a 55-year-old man has died, 25 deaths reported so far. And again, I want to put this in perspective. The normal flu in the United States kills about 36,000 people a year. That's about 3,000 on average per month, even though most of the deaths are during the flu season, of course. We're talking about 25 deaths in China, and they're talking about it as if it's the end of the planet. Lead and eight other metals are found in lipsticks and lip glosses commonly sold in the United States. Some at levels that could raise potential health concerns, according to a new report. Researchers measured levels of cadmium, chromium, titanium, and other metals in 32 lip products purchased from drugstores and department stores in California. They detected lead in 75% of the products, according to the report. Half of the samples contained lead at concentrations higher than the maximum allowed by the FDA in candy, likely to be consumed by small children, for example. Atlanta area authorities are investigating the death of Chris Kelly, half of the 1990s rap duo Chris Cross, as a possible drug overdose. The 34-year-old Kelly died Wednesday at an Atlanta hospital after he's found unresponsive at his home. Scientists said that they found a brain region that controls physical aging and could target it to manipulate the lifespan of lab mice. The findings may be a step towards finding the holy grail of slowing down human aging, but have yet to be tested in human subjects. Neil Slade, author of course, Tickle Your Amygdala, and a number of other great books on the brain, This is an exciting story, Neil.
Well, it's pretty interesting. They found that they could make the lice, the mice would live about 20% longer if they targeted specific regions in the brain that controls hormones and the immune system and so on.
In this particular case, as science gets a little closer to brain study, Neil, something you've studied for a long, long time, may they really be able to pinpoint aging and get us to slow down or stop aging?
Well, the scientists who did this study, they readily admitted that aging is a very complex process. But ultimately, I think this group of scientists would agree that the brain is really the kingpin. It's going to have the biggest influence on whether we age slower or faster. And probably it's the most important part of the body, you know, involved in that whole process. So if we focus on how the brain is involved in the aging process, we're going to be a little closer to actually controlling aging, whether it's within the brain itself or in another part of the body.
That's exciting. Neil, thank you so much. Scientists searching for signs of life beyond our solar system should keep an open mind for planets very different than Earth may well be habitable, according to a prominent researcher. While it may seem natural to zero in on alien Earth-like planets, such a narrow focus would exclude many potentially life-supporting exoplanets whose diversity comes to astronomers by the tens, they say, according to Sarah Seeger of MIT. The researchers are excited about this one. You know, a story we've been reporting on, the citizen hearing on disclosure attempting to accomplish what the U.S. Congress has failed to do for 45-plus years, seek out the facts surrounding the most important issue of this time or perhaps any other time. Is there life in space, and are they visiting us? Up next, Dr. Roger Lear joins us. He will be testifying at the citizens' hearing tomorrow, and he'll be with us in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Now, as I mentioned, the citizen hearing on disclosure is going on in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club. It's configured to resemble a Senate hearing room. As a matter of fact, there are some former members of Congress who are acting as the role of congresspeople and senators listening to testimony. Tomorrow, Dr. Roger Lear will be giving his, and here he is back on Coast to Coast. Roger, how you doing?
Oh, I'm holding up quite well, George. Thank you.
Good for you. Tell me a little bit about your involvement with the citizens' hearing on disclosure, Roger.
Well, I was picked amongst a group of individuals to testify before a congressional committee, all of which are composed of six individuals who are formerly with the United States Congress. We have one senator and rest are from the House of Representatives. This is the first time that an event like this has ever taken place. And the National Press Club, the main room, was configured as a congressional hearing room, and they're conducting these meetings in accordance with all the procedures of a congressional committee, including panels being sworn in. So the pressure is really on. There's a chair. The chair changes from day to day with each one of the members of the committee taking the place of the chairman. You're allowed 10 minutes for an oral written presentation, which mm-hmm. has already been turned over to the committee, and then they are allowed to ask you questions for, sometimes it goes on for 2 hours.
It's open to the public. How has attendance been?
Attendance has been relatively good. Of course, we've got the live streaming going on there constantly. Anybody can see this on citizenshearing.org. And it's being broadcast in English and Spanish. It's also available in five other languages, including Mandarin. Today happened to be the day in which foreign representatives were here all day long, including most of the countries in South America, England, Canada, a number of other countries, including China and France. So it really covers the day from a world standpoint. And I think by now, although we've only heard a smattering of evidence, and there's only one more day to go, that they are also so surprised at what they're hearing. I mean, it's just the results have been phenomenal. And as I said, you know, there are several, I've talked to several members of the commission, and they want to push for a draft to having a hearing before the United Nations. They said, don't bother with the General Council of the United Nations. Let's go, you know, right before the body of the United Nations with this. And Danny Sheehan, who is the legal representative for the group, is drafting with one of the previous senators, Senator Gravel, an agreement now, and he's going to lobby this through the United Nations body.
Now, tell me this, the media exposure and coverage, how has it been?
We've had media-wise, as far as I know, this morning. I didn't get the tallies from this afternoon or this evening, but we've had ABC, NBC, CBS, New York Times, Washington Post.
Great.
There's also a continuous blogging that's going on from several other sources, including the Huffington Post. The New York Times is here, but they haven't written their article, and the reporters say they're going to wait till the end of the hearings to actually come out with their statement.
Do the folks in the media seem to be taking this seriously, Roger?
When you talk to them, they seem to be quite serious. But, you know, George, we've been in this business for a long time. So the answer is still, you know, up in the cloud somewhere as to how they're going to spin this. Because of the serious nature of the way the Congressional Committee is handling this, I would say that you know, it would be very difficult for news media such as the New York Times to certainly make a few non-friends with people who have a collective 80 years in the United States Congress.
Of course, Dr. Roger Lear will be testifying tomorrow. Here are some of the others who have been there or who will be there, of course, with the Disclosure Project being put on by Stephen Bassett. Here are some of the names. Sergeant John Burroughs, United States Air Force retired. John Callahan. Grant Cameron, you've heard of him. He's been on the program from Canada. Alejandro Chianetti from Argentina. Dr. Anthony Choi from Peru. Peter Davenport, of course, from the National UFO Reporting Center. And then, of course, great author and researcher Richard Dolan. Captain Bruce Fenstermacher, United States Air Force retired. Patrick Frasconia, a lawyer. Major George Filer, he's again the United States Air Force retired and puts out the Filer report. Lieutenant Colonel Richard French, also retired Air Force. Stanton Friedman from Canada, you've all heard of Stanton. A.J. Gravard from Brazil. Dr. Stephen Greer, of course, was just on the program a week and a half ago. And Paul Hellyer, who's a former defense minister from Canada, he too will be testifying. He's got some heavyweight people here, Roger.
Oh, yes. We have a few extras that you didn't mention. Bob Salas, of course, will be there. Dr. Robert Wood is here. We have the whole Marcel family here. Jesse Jr., Jesse the third, and the sister. I've forgotten what her first name is. I think you mentioned Alex Chianetti. We have Nick Pope from retired from the MOD in the UK, who's now living in the United States. We have Fenstermacher and Schindel, both pilots, and giving stories about actual combat missions with UFOs. Paul Hellyer, I don't know whether you mentioned him.
Yeah,
Linda
sure
Moulton
did.
Howe is also here. It's just, you know, those people who seem to have commanded the respect within the field of ufology. And certainly South America was well representative.
And these are generally people who have witnessed UFOs or very strange things, aren't they, Roger?
Yes, they're all people who have either witnessed UFOs or are experts on UFO documents. Of course, Grant Cameron was just won an award for the year.
Right.
And his presentations are without a doubt. Anyone that listens to him would have to really sit up and have their ears open, because what he has to say is very clear, very, very clear. Antonio Huenas, also with Open Minds magazine, has a tremendous amount of knowledge. Lost my train of thought there.
Well, Roger, let me ask you this. I mean, with the incredible exposure that this is getting, will Congress, the real Congress, ever step forward and have an actual hearing just like this?
On a one-on-one basis that we've discussed this with the Congress people, the answer is, unsurprisingly, no.
Well, we all know that, don't we?
Yes, and we asked them about their 15% approval rating, and they said for Congress at the present time, that's high.
That is high. Here's probably one of the problems, you know, with everything that's going on this planet right now, of horrible nature, of course, you know, budget problems, terror problems, war problems, and everything else. I guess for them to devote time to what we would consider to be a serious and fascinating topic of UFO disclosure, they probably don't. They probably say, you know what, we don't have the time for this. And do they call it nonsense, or they just don't want to get involved?
No. The attitude that the panel describes about Congress, the sitting Congress as it is now, is that they are told from sources above, you know, what else, how else can you put it, sources of that are above their status, not to talk about this subject. You know, they also, you know, have to pray to higher masters. And as one of the congressmen put out, Mrs. Kilpatrick, who is a very honest and wonderful person to deal with, she's said over and over and over again that this is a global situation, and it's not just the United States, but it's other countries which seem to be under the auspices of the United States that are also not releasing any information. They learned a lot of information about the United States' involvement in other countries on this planet.
Roger, with the way it's going right now, are you happy with the way it's being put together?
Personally, I'm very happy, very enthused. Of course, my testimony is tomorrow, so I don't know what effect that's going to have, because up until now, they've, like, you know, going to your local deli and taking a piece of bologna and slicing it, you know, they're just looking at tiny slices of the subject. These are people who really know nothing about it. You know, some of the battles that went on, I mean, I've never, you know, heard these battles that went on, these air battles, where they were shooting 30-millimeter ammunition at these objects without striking them with using equipment and sharpshooters who were the best in their field and having no effect on them whatsoever. So there has been air battles. There has been people killed. There have been people that have been lost. There's aircraft that were down. They also, you know, there was many admissions to the fact that there's been numerous crashes of these, what we believe were non-terrestrial vehicles, and that the results of these crashes was that the material has essentially been taken back to the United States.
Roger, we're going to take some phone calls with you. Plus, I want to talk a little bit about the implants that you've removed from people. We shall be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we're talking about the citizen hearing on disclosure. Dr. Roger Lear with us, former members of Congress, of course, in the hearing. They were paid a pretty good hefty sum to be there, of course. It's reported about $20,000 apiece for them. Roger Lear, of course, didn't get that. He'll be back in a moment. He'll talk about some of the implants in his operations, and we'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Roger, I assume you're going to be talking about the implants tomorrow and the things that you've gone through.
Yeah, yes, George, I certainly am. I also wanted to mention that I found this rather a two-way street, because I learned things from this congressional committee that I had not known before, and I think our listeners might be interested in what they had to say, at least on 3 points.
All right.
Number one, Eisenhower, we know, made the statement about being aware of the military-industrial complex. I was told by one of the senators who had been there for many, many, many years in Congress that the speech was actually changed almost immediately before he gave it, and that it should have read the military-industrial-congressional complex. The other thing that I found from several of the individuals on the panel is how things are done in Congress, and the amount of the lobbying that goes on, and the people that they have to listen to, and so on. But as I said, you know, I go here, and it's a two-way street, so you can learn things from these people who have, as I said, an excess of 80 years of experience in this field. And they're really surprised about what many of them have never even heard of, these battles that went on or deaths that occurred because of UFOs or losses of ships on both sides. So there were many, many surprises. So, but I thought I'd like to share that about the military-industrial complex, and including Congress.
What did you find to be one of the most startling revelations out there, Roger?
Personally, I had not heard of some of the air battles that occurred in other countries. Also, the openness. We discussed in detail the openness of the South American countries. The one that's the most open and for the longest time has been Uruguay. Uruguay today actually sends Air Force military personnel out to schools to train the children about UFOs and extraterrestrial life. That came as quite a shock. Now, just recently, as you probably know, A.J. Girard from Brazil was at a meeting, a top-level meeting in Brasilia with the Ministry of Defense, and they have released another 5,000 pages of documents. And this is a lot of material. So they are releasing tremendous amounts of documents. Some of the booklets of documents that were presented to the committee are as thick as dictionaries.
All right, let's take a few calls here with Roger in the moments we have left with you. We'll go to Mark in Ventura, California. Here, you got some fires out your way, Mark. I hope all is well.
Yeah, I can see the smoke right from my home. It's something, really. And I wonder why no one ever thinks that's terrorism. A windy day, you know, a few fires, burn the state down. They never mention that. But I've met Dr. Lear a couple times in the past, and I really admire him, and I'm happy to see he's out of the hospital and well and with us. And I had a question, though. I started the Art Bell Chat Club for Ventura and Santa Barbara about 15, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Lear came, and he looked at my left leg. I had the scoop mark, and we had a black light. And he said, yeah, that's one of the things. But I had something strange happen, And I went to doctors and stuff, and they couldn't figure it out. On my left calf, my left leg, I would have like a cattle prod would hit it. I think this, if I had an implant there, was shorting out. There'd be like a cattle prod would hit it. I'd get a tremendous electric shock that would knock my leg out from under me. But it would be such a short time period that I could grab myself before I fell. And it was such a tremendous electric shock. You know, if you get something like that, it makes you expel the air out of your lungs. And you actually go, you know, like that. That's a pretty good, like, cattle prod shock. And it went on for a couple of months, and then it went away. And I was wondering if Dr. Lear ever heard of, like, an implant maybe short-circuiting doing that to somebody? Or
what do you think, Roger?
No, I really haven't heard of any of those symptoms. But as I've said time and time again, that if there's a suspicion, if you have any suspicion at all that there's a foreign object in your leg or your toe or some other region of the body, just simply go in and have an x-ray taken, as I've never found one yet that didn't show up on an x-ray. I'm not asking for a complex CAT scans, MRIs I don't like at all. They're non-diagnostic for foreign bodies. CAT scans sometimes help if you know where the object is, but just a plain, simple, ordinary light view, because you know, not really looking at bones. But we, you know, as a medical physician, we always have to look at the more mundane aspects of that kind of a problem first. You could have, an acute neuritis going on in your leg, or even a pinched nerve in your back, which would cause the same sensations. So before we look to non-terrestrial causes, we have to look at the more mundane aspects first.
What has been the strangest implant you've taken out, Roger?
Indeed, George, I can say without a doubt the strangest one was one that appeared to be all biological, that moved under the skin in a circle of with a diameter of about 2.5 inches if you touched it. And if you touched it for a while, almost like it got to know your finger, and it would follow my finger around. And I have this video, and when I look at it still to this day, it really makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck. It was removed. The object was the size of a very large pea, yellow in color. It had some lines that were cursing up either side, and it opened from the middle like a clam. Now, please, please don't quote me anybody, because I did this, I think, on Coast some years ago, and I got hundreds of emails that said Dr. Lear removed a clam from somebody's arm.
That's right.
So it's a bivalve sort of situation in which the object opened from the middle, and we think that was its means of movement underneath the subcutaneous tissue. It took actually four hands to get this out, because it moved away from your instrument.
We're taking phone calls with Dr. Roger Lear as we talk about the Citizens Disclosure Project. Let's go to Newburgh, Indiana. Sue Ann's with us. Hello, Sue Ann. Good morning.
Good morning to you both. Dr. Lear, I am so glad you're well and able to make this show. I've been an admirer of yours for quite some time. And I personally have been followed by UFOs since I was 13. And I think I was taken up for a transplant or for an implant the other night, about 2 weeks ago. And I've had a migraine headache ever since. So how easily do these things come out?
Well, it depends on where they are and what the justification is for removing them. Sometimes it's a relatively simple job to take them out, because most of them we found have a location which is near a bone yet superficial in the body. We've yet to see one deep and within the thorax or the abdominal cavity or the brain. I've talked to people here who have come up to me on the QT and told me that they had possible implants. One lady today with a four-year-old daughter said that she, in the middle of the night, talked about the little mice people that came into her room and put something in her nose. And she woke up in the morning and had a terrible nosebleed. But there was blood that the child during the night had wiped also on her leg. But by the time morning came around, everything was dry. She took the daughter to a physician and said, well, she probably just had a bloody nose. And also, I appreciate your very kind comments about my health. I'm not getting any younger, but at least I'm able to function and continue the task of my life.
Well, I really appreciate you being at this task. I had no idea that it was going on because of my migraine. I sort of lose track of time.
Well, if you can and you want to listen to it live, as I said, it's being blogged by the Huffington Post all 5 days of the hearing, and you can also get it on citizenshearing.org, and it'll be archived. So if you missed most of the week or any part of it, you'll be able to catch it. And if you speak Mandarin, you'll also be able to receive it in that language.
You got to give Stephen Bassett credit for putting this together, Roger, huh?
Oh, Steve has just done an absolutely tremendous job. He's been lauded over and over and over again during the sessions with standing ovations from not only the people, the visitors attending the hearing, the witnesses, but also the congressional committee itself.
We go to Maryville, Tennessee now, east of the Rockies. Gary's turn. Hi, Gary. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call, sir. Dr. Lear, it's an honor to speak with you. I had an object, and I'm going to be as anatomically correct here as possibly, removed from the top of my penis just behind the head. And doing construction work, you get things under your skin. They move around your body. I didn't think anything of it. But what happened was is when they touched the object, during the surgery, it interfered with electrical equipment. And I was actually listening to a CD player at the time, a battery-powered CD player. And when they touched the object, it went to a staticky sound on the CD player.
What could cause something like that, Roger?
Well, you know, most of the implants that we've removed are connected to a nerve tissue called proprioceptors, which are inappropriate for that anatomical position of where the object may be. So it is possible, because we're dealing with an electronic object, these things do emit not only radio waves but electromagnetic frequencies from, let's say, 4 to almost 10 milligauss, which is quite a large amount of magnetic radiation. To give you a classic example, an ordinary modern professional television camera used for broadcast television today will put out about 4.3 milligauss. That's a large camera. One of these objects that may be 7 to 10 millimeters in length by as thick as a pencil lead could be putting out 9 milligauss. So that's not too surprising if it was truly I have to ask you, what happened to the object?
Well, let me ask you this, Roger. What would make some ET entity want to put something like that in his sexual organs, for crying out loud? What are they trying to monitor?
Well, I would say the biggest chance of that being is that it was probably not the original site of implantation. We're dealing with entities that may be, you know, many years in advance of our own technology, but believe me, they do make mistakes, and the human body, being what it is not constant. Everybody's different. So that could have been put in someplace else and may have migrated to that area of the body.
Roger, are you convinced that these implants are indeed being put in people, most of them, from some kind of extraterrestrial source?
With the latest research that we have done and with the increase of the modernization of not only techniques but equipment, to give you an example, and EDX, which is done with an electron microscope, maybe 12 years ago at a voltage of around 8,000 kilovolts, you could get maybe 150,000 times magnification. Anything over that would look like pixelization, let's say, on a computer. Now we've got equipment in which at 15 or 20,000 kilovolts will give you magnifications from 750 to 1 million times magnification with no scattering. Years ago, we were not able to look for things such as carbon nanotechnology because they didn't even know carbon nanotubes could exist, either in nature or be made. The first ones to talk about that were the Russians in the 1980s, but they never were successful and able to make one. It wasn't until the 1990s where we were able to actually make a very simplified carbon nanotube in a laboratory here in the United States. Now we're looking at objects removed from individuals who, in one case, has been in for 46 years. That takes us, you know, quite a ways back towards, you know, the time of Roswell. And to re-engineer anything like that in that period of time is relatively impossible.
Let's go to Evan in Clarksville, Arkansas. We'll get one or two more calls in here for you, Raj. Go ahead, Ev.
Yeah, hey, it's nice to speak with both of you. I've actually never called into a radio program before, so this is interesting. But I have been listening to your show for quite a while, and the idea of, you know, extraterrestrials visiting this planet and somehow, you know, observing from a distance, you know, being so ever elusive and you know, possibly putting these implants into us and you know, picking out cows with the different, you know, situations you see where the, you know, mutilations and cross circles and all this business.
I'm losing you, Evan. I'm losing you right at the end. You broke up at the end. I don't know what he was trying to say, Roger, but...
Well, I think he's maybe surprised or calm. He's a little bit surprised at the amount of things that are going on that are conceivable and perhaps wondering why non-terrestrial races would do some of the things that they do. But... as you probably know, one of our eminent board members, Dr. Robert Kuntz, who's a nuclear physicist, has made calculations on the approximate, not only the age of the civilization, but where these materials come from in the universe. And that I'm going to discuss tomorrow with the committee, because they don't come from our solar system. He claims they come from at least one-third away across the Milky Way galaxy. And as Uncle Stan Friedman would say, if you live in New York, you don't go to New Jersey to buy your bread. So, you know, that may be, you know, where the entities are actually coming from. And he said, because of a mathematical equation, which is far, far over my head and ability to understand, based on the age of the Big Bang and how elements or isotopes change from one element to another, he said that the civilization has to be at least 1 million years older than we are.
And that, you know, with technology advancing as fast as it does, could be unbelievable. Good luck with your testimony tomorrow, Roger. Up next, Dr. Bruce Lipton joins us as we talk about the honeymoon effect. That's right, on Coast to Coast AM.